All right. Hi, everyone. Hope you can hear me okay. And here we go. So thank you all for joining us, and we're ready to get started. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and we are jumping into our third Thursday of the month, World Peace Diet Circle Zoom meeting, and it's October 24th, 2024, and this is the fourth Thursday, because last Thursday we were unable to actually carry it out. So thank you, everyone, for your flexibility, and I hope it didn't cause too much confusion. It's good to see you. Very happy to be here, happy to be back, and greetings from Hidden Valley Lake, California. As you probably are all aware, Madeline and I just returned day before yesterday, and it was a great tour. All in all, we had a whirlwind, and we were able to spread the vegan message, I think, pretty effectively in the places where we had some people attending, which was most of them. But we had a couple of places that it was not didn't go so well. I can maybe talk about that. I mean, it was just we didn't have people coming. And I think it was mainly because of some politics maybe was involved, at least on one of them. But anyway, but all in all, it was fantastic. We had some great turnouts and wonderful people. And our new book, The World Peace Way, is released on the way, we got the first copies in Squim up in northern Washington. And then we went into Canada with them, and that was great. So, and then the rest of the tour, all the way back down, we had them, and so we've been selling those and making them available to people. And I think it's a really a very helpful book, because it's not much philosophy in it. It's all just practical tips for thriving and celebrating our lives on this beautiful earth through understanding meditation and nutrition, and how we can connect with more deeply with nature, with movement, relationships, and creativity, and so forth. So a lot of people think that our health is mainly determined by our nutrition, and of course that's a big important part. And nutrition, there's lots of things. I talk about the Greek word dieta, which we get our word diet from, and it means way of living. And so we talk about the food we're eating, and the water and drinks and beverages we're consuming, and the creams we're putting on our skin, and the clean, you know, personal care products, and all the other stuff, and all the books we're reading, and the social media we're consuming, and the thoughts we're thinking. That's all nutrition. That's all part of how we're feeding ourselves. So it's very important to be savvy about all these things. And so the initial feedback's been really good on that book. It's a companion book, really, to Food for Freedom, and also really to the World Peace Diet. We've been talking for years about the importance of coming up with a book that would give the practical, the how. You know, the World Peace Diet and Food for Freedom are why it's important to stop eating animal foods and harming animals, and so all the many reasons to understand that whole thing at the deeper levels. And the World Peace Way is the how book for that. So we're delighted that is out now. And I guess we'll go ahead and get started. I think, do you still hear music? Oh, you still hear music? Maybe I should double check. No. Okay, good. It should. I'm a little bit confused as to why the share thing is on. But anyway, I think we're good. All right. So what we'll be doing, those of you, I think you know the more or less the format, will be having a short meditation here in the beginning, and then we'll just open it up for discussion. And I have something I'd like to share with you also, especially this time. I just thought it would be maybe good to get a little bit up to speed on the climate change issue, since that seems to be ramping up continually. Where can I get the World Peace Way? Well, the easiest place right now is on the internet. You can get it on our website, of course, but Yeah, Tammy's asking me the question. You're in Canada, so it's a little hard for us to ship up to Canada. But you can get it through Amazon, of course. You can also get it through Ingram, which is the biggest distributor of books besides Amazon. So it's in Ingram, and Ingram distributes to all bookstores and all over the world. So you can get it that way. It's at Kindle. It's available as Kindle. It's available as a regular printed book. You can order and have it shipped to you. Actually, if you go to Ingram, I think if you order it through Ingram, they print it in Canada and just send it in Canada. So you don't have to pay the fees for importing things. I think sometimes people have to pay that in Canada. So anyway, Ingram and Amazon are the two main distributors on planet Earth, and it's available through both of those. And from us, also, anyone who wants me to sign one and send it to you, I'd be happy to do that. It's $15 is the suggested donation for the book right now, and we have it also, like I say, on Kindle. And then the audiobook for all these, we're hoping for Food for Freedom and the other one. It's in the works, but it's a huge job to do audiobooks. All right, so let's go ahead and start with our meditation. Feel free to get comfortable. I'm so happy. This is the second to last third Thursday that we'll have access to Yuma, our grand piano. So that will be accompanying here, and I think we can go ahead and begin. Become aware of our breathing as we join in our time of meditation. So as we join together in our hearts, we give thanks for this beautiful life. For the inner light that is shining always in our heart, in our mind, in every cell of our being, then that is also shining in the heart and the mind of all living beings. And we give thanks knowing that there is one life expressing and radiating, celebrating through all of us, that we are on the great adventure of awakening to the truth that we are, to this present moment and all that the present moment contains. And potential, we give thanks for the beautiful creatures that share our earth, the beings we refer to as animals. We send them our love and support. We send them our apologies. We send them our sincerest wishes that they be free. And we send our love and support to all human beings, especially those who are going through difficult times, knowing that all of us are on our unique journey of remembering the truth. Abiding in our true home, abiding in gratitude, knowing that the efforts that we make and that everyone who is allied with our cause of liberation and compassion makes uplifts and brings us closer to the dawning of the universal truth that is ever present as we open our eyes and see. There's only one. We give thanks knowing that our inner guidance system is every day getting stronger and more connected to our conscious mind, that every day we are fully and deeply living our purpose on this earth for the benefit of all beings. And we see all of our days opening like flowers to reveal and to release the fragrance of love, compassion, joy, peace and freedom. And we see the whole earth getting brighter and more filled with the love that is in the hearts of all of us. So now we open to our practice of abiding in our true home, abiding in love. With every exhalation, we radiate loving kindness in all directions, filling the whole world with love, the truth of being. Abiding in love, breathing and radiating love to all living beings, excluding no one. Especially including ourselves, with every breath we radiate love to all dimensions of our life and all life. With every inhalation, now we engender the truth of compassion the great compassion that shines at the core of our being, the yearning to help relieve the suffering of others. And with every exhalation, we allow this feeling of compassion to radiate from our mind and heart, filling the whole world with compassion. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings. Abiding in our true home of compassion, with every inhalation we engender in our heart, the truth of joy, the joy that shines always as the essence of life within us, the joy of being. And with every exhalation, we allow this joy to overflow from our heart, fill the whole world with the truth of joy, with the light of unselfish joy, joy in the joy of others, joy in the joy we see all around us. Abiding in joy, and now finally, we engender in our heart the feeling of peace, the peace of understanding that we are always loved, we are always supported by the infinite web of all relations, to open and to unfold our highest potential. The joy, love, and compassion in our heart give rise to peace and harmony, ever present. With every exhalation, we allow this peace to radiate from our hearts and from our minds, filling the whole world with peace, understanding that beyond the human senses, we abide always in infinite peace. The truth of being. And we see the whole earth now bathed in the light of peace, harmony, coming home now. And as we close our meditation, abiding in our true home, abiding in love, abiding in compassion for all life, abiding in joy, abiding in peace and harmony. Love, compassion, joy, peace. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, everyone, for joining in our meditation time. All right. So first, let me say, if you have any pressing question or issue, whatever it is, just raise your hand. You can press on the, what is it, under React, I think it is, you can raise your hand. Yeah. And let's see, what else? Or if you're on your phone, press star, I think it's star 6. And otherwise, I'd like to just share a few stories from the road on our tour. And then also, I was thinking it would be good maybe to talk a little bit about the issue of anthropogenic climate change, because it keeps coming up. And I think it's good to kind of get an awareness of it. And so I want to say a few things about that and maybe show a few pictures that I put together. But before I do that, Madeline and I, as I said, we just returned, those of you who came in a little bit later, a couple of days ago from our tour. We were gone about 11 days, maybe, roughly, and we did 13 events. Most of them went very well. We started off in Mount Shasta. It was really terrific. We love Mount Shasta. You know, it's such a beautiful community, and there's a lot of activists there who are very interested in veganism and social justice and in freedom and health freedom. So, and our old friend Tara Gardner, some of you may remember Tara Gardner. She's a World Peace Eye facilitator from way back, and she actually stayed in our home when we were gone for a year in the RV, and then she stayed in our studio apartment. We have a little one down there for another year after that. And then she decided to move up to Mount Shasta. So anyway, she organized that one. And we met our friends, Lisa knows, Chris Twyman and Anna Maria. They're from Hippocrates. He used to teach at Hippocrates. He's a tremendous athlete. It's really tall, blonde, Superman kind of guy. He can balance like on one hand, walk around. I mean, he's like amazing athlete. Anyway, he and they just bought a piece of land up there, and they're off grid, and they bought. I mean, he said he spent like 200 hours looking, and he found a piece of land, like a whole, I think it's 2 acres or something, quite a good sized piece of land for only $20,000, something like that, and it's totally off grid. So they're putting in systems, and they're just going to live up on the mountain, right up, pretty high up on Mount Shasta. It's quite an amazing undertaking, and they're, you know, they're vegans and really quite spiritually oriented. So it was good to see that happening. And then we went up to Eugene, and Eugene is another place, a very interesting kind of a thing. You know, we were scheduled to do a lecture there through our friend who has the Eugene Vegan Action Network. So she's a longtime vegan activist. And she said, sure, we'll do one. And then she said, no, I don't want to do one. It's too much trouble. Everybody's, the whole Eugene vegan movement, this is kind of what she paraphrased. The Eugene vegan movement is, you know, the vegans are all woke. You know, it's just not worth it anymore up here. It's too much infighting and everything. And, so she canceled it, and then I said, okay, that's fine. But then she changed her mind. She said, well, you know, I was thinking about it. I think it would be good. We should just do it. So then I said, okay, good. So we did it, and it went very well. She had a big, you know, quite a big turnout in a nice place. And we were all kind of on the same page, because it's combining veganism sometimes, it depends on the situation, with health freedom ideas too, like in Food for Freedom. So that went really well. And then we headed over to Florence. Do you know Florence? Florence, Oregon. I didn't know, but it's a big tourist destination. It's right on the coast. It's a cute little town, touristy like heck, lots of little art galleries and all these kind of things. And I was a little concerned because they wanted me to speak at the Unitarian Church. And I used to always love speaking at Unitarian churches, and I still do, but I was a little concerned because, again, they're, you know, really, they were historically over the last 4 years heavily into making sure everybody gets vaccinated and wear your mask and all these things that I was a little bit worried about, but it went fantastic. There was none of that. It's out in the country. I think it's more. It was not too bad. I mean, they were really pretty down to earth people. So we had a really wonderful. I did the whole service, and it was all about animal rights and veganism. There's a woman there that moved up there from Santa Rosa. She's a good friend of ours, and I mean, she and her partner. And they moved up there and invited me, and they set it all up. And it was really fantastic because there was a lot of people that came to the talk that were not from the church. They heard that this vegan guy was coming, and so they showed up. So it was really a very huge energy. I mean, there's quite a lot of people, you know, for a small church. It was, I don't know, 80 or 90 people, so it was a pretty good turnout. And I just got an email from her about a couple of hours ago, actually, saying that, you know, when they moved up there a few years ago, she never went to church. She wasn't a church person, but she found the Unitarian Church was, you know, kind of a good fit. But there was no vegans there at all. So she started trying to, you know, started a little garden. They have a garden on the property and talking about it. And now she said with my presentation, there's suddenly all these people want to be vegan. So now she said, she found 10 people in the congregation that all want to be vegan, and then they put it out to their friends. And now she said, I've got 20 people. So now we're having a regular monthly potluck, and we're going to have vegan education. We're going to do study groups. We're going to really get this thing going. There was never any kind of a vegan anything in Florence, Oregon, but now we've got something going. And she said thanks to me. I mean, it's not really thanks to me and Madeline. I think it's partly a little bit that, but it's mainly the people, you know, her and the local people. They have the enthusiasm, but it's true. We've seen that quite a bit. When we come to a town and we give a lecture, a presentation, it does very often kindle something, and they start having a regular group, or it gets more people involved and that kind of stuff. So that was good. That was great, actually. So we had a good time there. But then, I don't know if I'll just tell you. Then we went up to Portland, and I thought this would be a big, you know, a really big gathering, because it was actually being put on by Northwest Veg, which is the big Portland vegan group. Which in the past we've done huge events, but it was always pre-COVID. And I remember doing an event there in the Unitarian Church, probably in 2018. We had 200 people came, and it was huge. The place was packed, and on social justice, so. But the thing was, I checked with the people in Portland about doing something right in Portland, and nobody answered. So I was a little concerned, because I thought, you know, Portland. I mean, Portland's like the woke capital of the universe. But there was somebody just north of Portland in the suburb, which is Vancouver, Washington, a guy named John. He said, all right, we'll put it on here. No problem. We'll put the word out. We'll have a big turnout. So we got there, and it was only him and his wife and nobody else. And I thought, what the heck's going on? And we all did. And then finally, only two other people came. So there was only like four of us. Six of us, I guess, total. And it was really spooky. And then I realized the next day what he said. I said, how did you get the word out? And he said, oh, I did it all through Northwest Veg. You know, they put it up on their website. I don't do my own email list anymore. It was a little bit too cumbersome. So they send out all the emails. Oh, and then I realized the next day they had everything on their website, except they never put mine up at all. And I think they never sent the emails out. I think they just didn't want anyone to know about it. You know, it was a heck of a thing, really, because we were all ready to go. And they, you know, I think it's this thing, you know, you're an anti-vaxxer, you know, we don't want to let anybody know about you coming. So it's funny, because a lot of these people in the Northwest Veg were really good friends of ours before COVID, and I sent them emails and say we're going to be there, and nobody responded. I mean, it's funny. I mean, some of these people were like really that's what happened. But then we went up the next day to Squim, and it was the exact opposite. I thought Little Squim, it's a little town up on the, you know, up in the very northern, sort of in the middle of nowhere kind of little town up by Port Townsend and Port Angeles. And we had a fantastic event. I mean, the place was full, and they were really excited and interested. And we met I just can't stop thinking about this family that lives up there. And we visited them later, but this I don't know what I can do. Maybe I could send you, I could put up a picture at some point. There's a family, this guy came, there was a nice turnout, a lot of people. And this woman, actually, she's been on our call sometimes. Her name is Pamela Zeman. She's a World Peace Tide facilitator who lives up there, and she just did a great job. She's not on Facebook or anything. She just networked it out through email, and other people did, and they really, the place was packed. It was a really good turnout, and it was just a lot of love and everything in there, in the room. And one of the people that came, who lives in this community where she lives, is a really nice little community nestled by a river, very right out in the country. I mean, really beautiful nature all around. His name is Jason, and he said he has 8 children. And so he came with his oldest son, Henry, who's probably 18 or so, and they're just very remarkable people. But what was so remarkable was afterwards we went down along the river, and they said they were there. He was there with all his 8 kids. The whole 8 kids were down by the river making a campfire. They thought we'd have a campfire and meditate together. And so I've never seen children like this in this society. They all stood there and just looked at me, and we talked, and they were the most peaceful, quiet, wide open, beautiful little beings I can't even imagine. I mean, they're the complete opposite of kids that you see nowadays. It was so spooky. It was like they were just like right there, and the ages were from like 4 to like 22. You know, it's this huge range of kids, and they were all just smiling and friendly and interested, and didn't say anything. Just wanted to listen to what we had to say, and very just totally quiet. And then I said, "Well, I want to take a swim in the river," and they said, "Okay." And they led me through the woods, and then since I wasn't going to wear any clothes, then they all disappeared and let me take my swim. And then I came back, and they were all waiting and asking how it went. Anyway, then we went to their they have a little it's a trailer. They just live in a trailer. These 8 kids and we met his wife, their mother, and but they have a beautiful garden, and each kid has their own part of the garden that they take care of, and we learn more, and they're completely untouched by society. Kind of they don't have a television. If they go into town or something and they see ads, they just put their hands over their ears. You know, they don't want to see anything. You know, they're vegan and they're you know, totally unvaccinated, totally homeschooled. They're untouched by our society in a very interesting way. But they live right there. It's just that there's 8 of them, so they have this community. It's like 10 people, like with the parents. And they have their own little world, and it was just delightful. I mean, Madeline and I are still kind of reeling from this experience of seeing how wonderful, how somebody can actually get married and have 8 kids and have the most. I mean, I wonder what's going to happen in the future, but they're off to a great start, and they're building a wood shop. The boy Henry, he makes these beautiful wooden spoons and other implements, and the girls are dressed, you know, in skirt very beautifully. They make their own clothes modestly, just really just pure. They're just so pure and innocent and beautiful. Anyway, we really enjoyed that, and I'm so grateful. I'm in touch now with them, and maybe we can have them on here sometime or something. I don't know what, but it's really interesting it gives me hope in humanity, like to see how kids can be just really peaceful and supported and loving and just great. Anyway, so then we took off the next morning. We went across the on a ferry over to British Columbia. It was cold and rainy, and we got there, and our wonderful friends Christina and John McLaren, their longtime World Peace Dive facilitators, arranged everything. So we had a really beautiful event there. Christine was a little bit disappointed that we didn't have more people. It was kind of a light turnout, but we had some great people who came, including Michael Clapper. You know Michael Clapper? Yeah, he showed up. The great famous doctor. He came and he sat there, and they're really concerned up in Victoria, because anytime they try to do anything that is at all about freedom, they have violent, very violent people coming and smashing things or using spray paint or whatever, or taking pictures of people when they go in and saying they're going to, you know, all this kind of stuff. Because Victoria, you know, she explained to me, it's just like the center of the woke, she calls it the woke mob. But anyway, so she didn't want to say anything about even veganism, or certainly not freedom or health freedom. So she made it about the four viharas. She said, I love the four viharas practice that you teach, love, compassion, joy, and peace. Let's just do it about love, compassion, joy, and peace. And they had a piano there so I could play and speak. And just do it about the four viharas. And so it was very peaceful. It was very nice, and it was lots of food. It was a really nice event, actually, with the Canadians. But I am concerned about Canada, because it seems that there's a lot of darkness of just oppression by the government. And I mean, we have it here too, but I don't know. It was a little bit. I could kind of feel it, and she described some of the circumstances that have been happening there too. People are pushing back, but a lot of them aren't, unfortunately. So anyway, we had a really beautiful time with them, and they live way out in the country with a garden, and it was great. And then we came back. We did another event in, in Bremerton, which wasn't very well attended either, because we just didn't have local people to promote it very well. But then we went to Brighton Bush, and that was fantastic. I don't know if you've been to Brighton Bush, but it's a hot spring resort. They serve all organic food, 99% vegan. They had a little tiny bit of dairy in one of the things, but it's basically a vegan organic place. And they had a lot of people. They must have had at least 100 people there, and we had a good turnout at our event. I would say, you know, 50 or 60 people came, and so we gave a talk. It's way out. There's no cell phone. It's really in the wilderness, and no Wi-Fi, no anything. Very beautiful tubs and hot springs out in nature, you know, under the trees and all that. I'd been there years ago, but there'd been a big forest fire in the meantime, so they'd redone everything. And then finally, we went to Bend, did an event there, and then over to a small event, actually, but it was good. And then we went over to then we went to Roseburg, and Roseburg is a stronghold for veganism. It's so funny because it's a kind of a Republican town, very conservative, working class, but they've got a great vegan group and a lot. It's a blue zones, and so they have a whole blue zones thing, and they have a wonderful vegan restaurant where we ate beforehand. So we had, there's a lot of wonderful people in Roseburg. If you ever go to Roseburg, they have a great community there that's vegan. That's just south of Eugene. And then we went down to Ashland for the last event. We had three events in Roseburg. I also did the Unity Church Sunday morning, did a workshop there. And then Ashland. If you've been to Ashland, it's a beautiful town. Lots of great little shops and wonderful people. We had a wonderful last event. Lots of lots of people came, and we have the new book to show, and they have a piano there too. So Verinda, I don't know if you know Verinda, but it's at her house. She's a really pretty well-known yoga teacher and vegan activist, and we're planning on hopefully next year doing a World Peace Diet facilitator training retreat at her property up there in Ashland. I think it would be really nice. She's got a huge, nice big space to do that. So we're thinking about doing that. But anyway, so that's kind of it in a nutshell. And now we have a few weeks before we leave on November 22nd for the 5-month tour across the country. So my basic feeling is that the vegan movement is pretty fractured still. There's a lot of divisiveness, but there are people working to try to build events and make things happen and to bring the vegan message. So Those of you, no, I won't. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I'll just say we're going to Sacramento on the 22nd, and then on the 23rd down to Las Vegas in probably of November. Probably something there. And there's a vegan group there, and then the Unity and Religious Center for Spiritual Living there, and then to Sedona, and to Prescott. I know April's there. We're going to see April. And Armighty May, you know, Dr. Armighty May, she's setting up an event for us in Prescott on the day before Thanksgiving on Wednesday, and then Thursday in Sedona with, you know, Richard Pitcairn and Susan Pitcairn. They're longtime vegan activists. He's a pretty famous veterinarian, famous for his Dr. Pitcairn's like number one expert on how to take care of your dogs and cats. And it's great that he's gone vegan, and so he's helping a lot with the raising of awareness about food for animals. And then we'll be heading across Albuquerque. We maybe do something in Albuquerque, then we'll be in Oklahoma City, and at the Unity Church, and also doing something with the local vegan group, and then down to Tyler, Texas, which is, they've got a university there with a vegan professor who wants me to talk about food politics, which I'd love to do. So we'll be presenting to the classes there at the university, and then going across Shreveport, Louisiana, and maybe something in Huntsville, Alabama, and then up to Chattanooga. And then from there down to Marietta, Georgia, which is Atlanta, a vegan event there. They have a beautiful place. The Marietta Unity Church has an animal care ministry, an earth care ministry, a health care ministry, and so all of these ministries are going to be sponsoring our event there. And then hopefully we can go to the Good Hope Sanctuary. It's an animal sanctuary in Athens, Georgia. We were there a couple of years ago. It's a beautiful place. And then we'll be done. And then after that, down to Florida to visit my sister, and then go to Hippocrates for 2 months. And then we'll be working our way back in March. And we have a lot of stuff already set up on the way back through Texas and Arizona. And yes, Gene, we'll be in San Diego in April. We have that booked already too. And then we'll be back home in April. So that's the overall plan ahead. So if you can be anywhere along the way, you can see our tour schedule, where we'll be. We'd love to see you if it works, and if you know people. And otherwise, let's see. I have a little question. What religion were they? Oh, you mean the people in Victoria? Yeah, that place wasn't any religion. It's just it was called the Church of Truth. I don't know what it is. It was held at a place called the Church of Truth, which is in Victoria, British Columbia. It was a nice place. They had a nice grand piano, and it was a good place. But I think it's an independent kind of a thing. All right. So does anyone have any questions or comments? I would like to do a little presentation on climate change. I was thinking, yes, Lisa, please unmute yourself, and good to see you.
Yes, good to see you. Ta-ta-ta. Welcome back.
Thanks.
And thank you for that brief summary of it's amazing all the things you went through. So excited for all that knowing about there are a lot of vegans still on our side. That's wonderful. It's very important this call for me, to hopefully get, your thoughts on the elections. Since it's coming up very soon, and it's, I don't know about, everyone on the call, but it's really, on my mind how best to participate in this very important elections as vegan and also health freedom activists. It's to me it's so hard to vote because I want to support Robert Kennedy, but he's on Trump's team, and I really don't want to vote for Trump. And on the other side, Kamala, even though she's a female, I mean, being female, I want to support female, but I really don't like the Democrats and what what we know about the truth, what they stand for, and
I think there's different ways you can look at this whole thing. I mean, one of the things I like to emphasize, really, is that we vote every day. I mean, we're always voting with our wallets and also with our words and thoughts. And that's really how we create our reality collectively and individually. And whatever happens on November 5th, I think it's good to keep that in mind. But as far as this particular election goes, I feel that the United States is in a situation where our freedom, our basic freedoms, like our medical or bodily autonomy freedoms and freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and so forth, have been under just a brutal attack for the last 4 years. And it's been driven by the plutocrats who, there's only a few of them, and to control everyone, they need to centralize power through the United Nations and through governmental agencies and through the financial institutions. And so they use both parties. They work through both parties. They control in many ways both parties, or they have historically. And I was always, as you all know, I won't spend too much time on it, but I was a lifelong Democrat. Really, I would never imagine voting for Republicans. And then I thought I didn't vote, for a while at all, or barely. I would vote for the animal right. There was the Humane Party. I'd vote for the Humane Party person, like for president and things like that, kind of symbolic. But I think in this election, personally, I voted for Trump. I've already voted. I just sent it in yesterday because I think we've got to buy some time. It's like Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. The whole Democrats in general, they've come out very clearly and said that their agenda is to destroy misinformation, destroy any possibility of people spreading misinformation. That's their number one priority, is to destroy misinformation. And under Trump, with Robert F. Kennedy and also Tulsi Gabbard, those three are campaigning together. And I really like Tulsi Gabbard's, she's a vegan and health freedom advocate, and I think Robert F. Kennedy, he's talking about, he's always been questioning the vaccine protocols, and he's really emphasizing the importance of stop poisoning the people. The Democrats, they're totally into poisoning everyone and not letting anyone say anything about anything. So, and I think as vegans, we're already in a minority. And if you have a regime taking over where they already are saying, like Kamala Harris said very clearly, said, millions of people use Twitter, she said. We can't let people say whatever they want. That would be a disaster. And John Kerry, the other day at the World Economic Forum, he said, we can't control society anymore. There's too much misinformation. Like, they want to control society. They think that they can just control it, and that misinformation is anything that questions the agenda. And really, the thing is, it's a small step for vegans to vote for Kamala Harris because they like Democrats and because she's a woman, or they think she's some other race. I'm not sure. That's a big scandal too, but whatever. But the thing is, she has clearly, and the Democratic Party in particular, the whole thing, is about censorship. And it's a small step from saying that, you know, you can't say anything against trans people or against whatever the agenda of the day is, to saying, well, you can't say anything against dairy because, you know, some people need dairy, and if you say anything against dairy, that's hate speech. You vegans, you better not say anything against dairy, eggs, or meat. That's hate speech. And vegans are going to find, they're going to get a dose of their own medicine. They're censoring so many people and thinking that it's okay to do that. So I think, I know Trump isn't perfect, you know, all that, but I just think we need to buy some time, and for sure not, it would see, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say what would happen. You know, it's hard because the thing is, even if Trump wins, right? I mean, that'll be somewhat of a miracle because the Democrats, you know, they're good at stealing elections. But if it's a real landslide and he wins, the Democrats have also said that they will not certify his election. So even if he wins, they won't certify it. So they'll say he can't win. They can't be president. He's a criminal, and they won't certify it. So whatever happens, I think we're heading possibly to a major, like a rapid of chaos, possibly. We'll see. And, you know, and in the background, we have nuclear weapons getting revved up in Ukraine and Israel and Iraq and Iran and Russia and China. I mean, all this real, it's really, you know, on the outer level, it's like some kind of a major either birth or transformation, looks like. But I think the most important thing, you know, is to just get informed. You know, I mean, I spend a lot of time, quite honestly, trying to understand all this. And I think there is something to be said for the idea that we should never vote at all, right? It's just, it's a slave plantation. You vote for one slave master or the other. Just don't even do it. You know, I can see that, but it's just not my nature. You know, I just feel like there is a better opportunity because I've seen it. And, you know, like when we were here in Lake County, I was trying to get the politicians to not lock us down and force us to wear masks when we went into stores. And it was the politicians that were doing it. And so it's like Jefferson said, the politicians are always a reflection of the people. So we need to raise our awareness so that we have better politicians. That's the main thing. And that's why we have our gathering. But it's not going to be, you know, things are going to go on after November 5th. Whoever wins the election, we'll see what happens. But the most important thing, I think, really, will be to continue with bringing the vegan message, because we'll never have human liberation without animal liberation. And we'll always have war if we exploit and abuse animals. I mean, we just sow those seeds by the millions every day, and we find war and violence and oppression and injustice continuing because that's what we're practicing. So the vegan message has to go on, and I think the most important issue is freedom, like that we are free somehow to speak our mind, and I use that, and I think it's an important election for those reasons, and that's why Madeline and I are – this is the first time I've ever voted for Trump. I just think, yeah, now I got to do it because – and I'm so glad that Kennedy – came over and Tulsi Gabbard came over, and I'm really glad also that Dick Cheney is supporting Kamala Harris, and she's so happy that the Cheneys are supporting her. It just shows it's warmongers, torturers that are really running things over there, and they're corrupt and violent. And I mean, the Democrats, well, they were the Ku Klux Klan originally. I mean, the Democrats were always the most violent, oppressive of the parties. And now they're showing their true colors, and they've been taking, you know, it's really been taken over completely. So you'd have to shoot me before I'd ever vote for a Democrat at this point. I mean, that's like, I'm never going to do it. I'm so appalled at what they're doing. It's just absolutely terrible. So anyway, that's my take on the whole thing.
Thank you, Dr. Toto. Yeah, I used to vote Democrat, but when I awakened with the pandemic and what the Democrat really is, they're really truly the Nazis in disguise, and so I'm not going to vote for Democrats, but I used to vote just the Green Party, the Freedom Party, like you said, but it's not going to make an impact. So I really want to support Robert Kennedy, and mm-hmm. so that's what I would never imagine I would vote for Trump, but I guess
you gotta look at the policies, you know, and also understand, you know, there's never been a president that's been so brutally attacked. They're always taking, you know, they never do that, so there must be a reason. But anyway, Andy, you had your hand up. Do you want to say something?
Hi. Okay. I guess I'm going to throw my two cents in. So first, Will, I love, and I tell people all the time that you always pull out your wallet and you say you're going to vote with your dollar, and or we vote with our behavior and what we eat and all of that. And I think people forget the power that they have as individuals. You know, if I were going to vote, I already submitted my ballot by posting it on a poll outside in the woke community, and I crossed off everything, and I wrote down things like Larkin Rose and resources, Rose Accord, you know, all of this.
Right, right.
So I posted it up there in public. But every single day is such a powerful opportunity for us to take our own power back, because no matter what these authority figures tell us to do, if we don't listen, they can't force us to do anything. So, you know, just like right in the beginning of 2020, I never wore a mask. I am living in, I guess, one of the most worst woke communities. You know, I've had many dealings with the police just because of my refusal. I've been banned from different places. And try to imagine. Because so many, not a lot at that time, people are more courageous now, but people did come up to me and say, I admire your courage. Try to imagine if each of those people, they believed in what I was doing, they didn't want to wear the mask, but they did because they were doing what they were told. They were too afraid to not wear the mask, say no. If they had said no and just stood their ground, they would have been supporting me. We could have been growing as a community and standing up for our rights. No politician, in my opinion, can do that. It's got to be the people that stand up for themselves and stand up for one another and support one another.
Right.
So anyway, that's
right.
So powerful. Sorry.
Yeah, okay. No, I think, that's an important point, really. It does come from us. But in my dealings with politicians, like when I talk to Dennis Kucinich and some of these other people, they always emphasize that the power is with the people. But even if they as politicians would like to do things better, they can't go farther than the people are. So I agree, you know, with you that it really does come from us in our daily life and how we vote and how we do our things. But it's just the other thing is, like, I've been reading just late, like just today, how Tedros with the World Health Organization and also other people in our government in the Biden administration are talking very seriously about not allowing anyone who's vaccine hesitant to not be vaccinated, you know, just not allowing it, that everyone must be vaccinated. You're not allowed to not be vaccinated. That's not an option. And like Kamala Harris, you know, everyone in her office has to be vaccinated. You know, there's a real push in this vaccine thing. And I think we have a, you know, that's a political, that's governmental laws. And when the plutocrats can use the government to enslave us like we do with livestock, we need to use the political system or at least not allow that to happen. And if there's not enough people then who are standing up, then those kinds of things can happen. So that's why I think it's much more, that is much more likely scenario under Harris than it is under Trump and Kennedy and so forth. So I think we just need to be aware of those things, and that's why, personally, I think I'm curious. I mean, it'll be interesting because there's a massive push on to discredit Trump and Kennedy and not allow them to have a say and to basically turn humanity into livestock. That's the agenda, as you know.
Right. So, I know.
So we have to, I think, not be stupid. I mean, like, really use whatever power we have with our wallet voting and also with the ballot voting. Personally, that's what I think. I mean, I'm just going to vote every possible way I can and encourage other people, you know. But I realize the country is so divided. And if I talk to some, you know, these people with Trump derangement syndrome, so many people that have that. I mean, do you see what The Atlantic just did? I mean, The Atlantic magazine, you know, they just ran an article, I just saw it today, saying how that Trump, there was this woman who was in the military in Texas, and a woman in the military in Texas in at Fort Hood or somewhere down there, and she was murdered. And so Trump offered his regards. He said he would help. He had the family come to the White House, and he was nice to them, and he said he would pay for the funeral. And The Atlantic wrote an article of pure lies, saying that when they came to the they came and he wasn't nice to them, and then that the that they had a meeting, and he asked how much did that wedding cost, I mean that funeral cost, and they said it cost $60,000. And so they wrote in The Atlantic article that when Trump heard that, he said, I don't want to spend $60,000 for some effing Mexican funeral, you know. And so they wrote that in the article. They wrote this whole article about what a racist he is, what a liar he is, and all that. And then after that, all the people who were at the meeting, including the family and everybody else, started tweeting that never happened. You know, he never said that. They were at the meeting, and the family said that he was nice and he paid for it, and he was, and everybody. I mean, we've gotten to the point where the mainstream media, like The Atlantic and all these, they will just lie, and people who hate Trump will read that and they'll never question it, and they'll go on their way thinking, yeah, he's a real racist, he's a fascist, and it's just lies. I mean, how do you know what's really happening? How do we know? I mean, we get the media, it's nothing but one lie on top of another, and we have to really understand that. And you know, I mean, they went after him at the very beginning with this whole Russia collusion thing. It's all lies. Everything is lies. I mean, all that was lies. So I think we just have to, you know, be savvy enough to be aware of that. But I don't want to, you know, go too long on this whole thing.
Can I throw out one more thing? So one other possibility besides not complying is the other thing that I've been doing since 2020, when they said we weren't supposed to be supposedly outside or whatever. I have been outside in public parks, sometimes at grocery stores. I'll set up my signs. I had bought a loudspeaker. I'll either be playing mellow music to attract people in or freedom speeches. But and I made this funny little thing, like one of my signs to be open to both sides, to both parties. I have a sign that says, like, right in front of the dog park I'd be sitting, and it says, we voted for the wrong species. We should have voted for dogs and cats and cows and babies. And it got both sides to laugh and agree. And that's the thing, was because they shut down conversation. If we can't talk to one another,
right,
that they're successful in the divide and conquer. So that's right. My thing is, we can still go out to public places and educate people. And I sort of like that. I mean, even though if I were to pick a side, of course it would be the Trump side now. But I like to let people know I don't support either side. I think the whole government is corrupt. And on the bottom of my flyer, it says something like, the left and the right need to stop fighting, start talking, and find out what's really going on. Otherwise, these billionaire corporations will succeed in stealing our money while we're busy fighting instead of talking. So anyway, we can still go out to public places and educate people, and we're not going to have any news people shouting out it's misinformation, because we're talking to people in the public directly. So anyway, it's an opportunity. I still stop at all these construction sites because our town here in Encinitas is completely redesigned. It's, you know, they'll be finished with the 15-minute city soon. But we can talk to so many people and set up just little, you know, tables with some flyers or resources and some signs to attract people and be kind to them. And anyway, okay, I'm
done. Thanks, Andy. Yeah, no, I like the grassroots approach. I think that's good. And any way that we can, and of course the vegan message is critical. All right, so let's see. We've got a few comments here. Yeah, James Corbett. James Corbett is really great. Maybe I'll just go ahead and do since there isn't any other hands raised, I'll do a quick screen share because I thought it would be interesting to just show my little slideshow about the. So I'll go ahead and do this. So I just want to show you this. So here we go. So this is basically a little bit about the whole anthropogenic climate change. And let's see. Yeah. So I don't know if you can see this, but there's a lot of people, like this one here. This is 31,000 American scientists have signed this petition that there is no global climate change, right? Global warming thing happening. And it's very important to be aware of some of the things that are going on, like the fact that scientists are funded. I understand this. I think you folks do too, probably. But let's see. Wait a minute. Why isn't it going forward? Let's see. So this is an interesting one, if you can kind of see this. This is the carbon dioxide of planet Earth. I mean, where we are now, it's really low, right? I mean, we're down at barely at 400 parts per million. That's not high. And carbon dioxide is important. I mean, we have to understand that. So without carbon dioxide, we don't have anything growing. It's the main thing, how things grow. Like this is a picture of Princeton's William Happer. He's a great climate scientist, growing a tree at these different parts per million of carbon dioxide. You know, like 400 parts per million, 530, 680, 830. So the more parts per million you have of carbon dioxide, the more things grow. 1977 was the coming ice age. Now we have global warming. You know, it's these narratives that get always rolled out. Like in 1989, they're saying the whole civilization is going to be wiped off the face of the earth by floods. I mean, we've been hearing these kinds of scary things for forever. If this is a new, you know, the fact that actually the islands are getting larger now than they were before. This is something really important. Just this particular graph, I'm hoping you can look at this. It's less global warming for each additional 100 parts per million by volume of carbon dioxide. I don't know why this keeps going. That's weird. I'm having trouble with my thing here. But anyway, so just notice this. From 0 to 100 parts per million, that's 70% of the change that carbon dioxide can make in affecting some kind of global warming. So we're only at 400 parts per million. That's already 88% of the possible warming that carbon dioxide can affect. Why does it do that? Can affect. So what that means is, even if carbon dioxide goes up to 400, 500, 600, 700, 800, 900 parts per million, the amount of effect, this is ridiculous, that it has is minimal. It doesn't make any change. And carbon dioxide is tiny in its effect compared to water vapor. I mean, water vapor is like 95% of global warming, and carbon dioxide is less than 5%. So what we're doing with carbon dioxide is literally nothing. Basically, in the big picture, and this is what scientists who are climate scientists understand. We got the IPCC, which is full of money, and I've seen this. I've been following this for years, and so I just think it's important to understand this other thing. Like we had in this period, you can see when the temperatures got really cold, we had that cold snap is called the Little Ice Age in the 1600s, 1700s, up to the 1800s. And now it's just naturally warming up. But back here, around 1,000, we had what was called the medieval warm period, actually a little bit before 1,000, where like the country that's now known as Greenland, where now there are glaciers. Back then, they were growing food there. It was green. So it's we're in a colder period. I mean, everything that we're being told is a bunch of lies about the climate. That's what I've discovered as I keep researching this. So maybe I won't go too much longer, but you can look at these graphs and understand what's happening. The IPCC, which is totally political, it's by the United Nations, which is controlled by the plutocrats. They have an agenda to enslave humanity, and it's global climate change is the way to do it. Like Andy said, with 15-minute cities, you're not allowed to go anywhere. That's called slavery. You're not allowed to travel because of your climate footprint. That's slavery. And people are so gullible, in my point of view, they just don't see that. Here's the temperature, so you can see. And the medieval warm period we've had many of these. It's changing all the time. And so I think once we understand the bigger picture, like where we are now is not hot. I mean, we don't have to worry about global warming being hotter. It's been a lot hotter in the past. And if we look at the bigger picture, we're way down here. I mean, it's been much warmer over the last 10,000 years. And before that was a glacial period. So these are basically graphs that show that, and this is discussing the whole thing. I won't spend too much time, and also the fact that, you know, this whole idea that we have so many droughts now. I mean, we do have weather warfare, but the underlying idea is that we've had much worse droughts in the past than we have now. And the same thing as floods. Flooding is actually less than it has been in the past. I mean, it's actually going down. This is the other important point is that temperature. People say that carbon dioxide causes the climate to get hotter, and the actual ice core samples show that it always is afterward. In other words, the temperature goes up, and that causes carbon dioxide to change because the oceans, as they get warmer and as they cool, they take in or release carbon dioxide. So it's actually the temperature that changes the level of carbon dioxide, and not the other way around. So the whole idea that carbon dioxide causes any kind of climate is complete baloney. This whole thing, it's just infuriating. And this also shows greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. I mean, water vapor is like almost all of it. Carbon dioxide and methane and nitrous oxide, they're small, much smaller. And water, we know that. If you live in a humid climate, it holds in the heat, right? You live in the desert, it doesn't hold in the heat. It gets cold at night. I mean, water vapor is what is the greenhouse gas. This whole idea, it's amazing to me that that this is going on for all these years and nobody questions it. And vegans are yelling and screaming about climate change still. And it's nothing but a bunch of lies. Look, and this other thing, the Tonga eruption. I mean, we have to understand this. You know, the Tonga, Hunga Tonga volcano was 500 meters below the surface of the Pacific Ocean, and it blew in January 2022, and it shot 150 million tons of water into the atmosphere, increased the water vapor in the atmosphere by 13%, and scientists back then in 2022 in January said, okay, for the next 5 years it's going to be warmer because of all this water vapor. It's going to hold the heat in more, and now we're seeing all this flooding, and part of that is all the water vapor that's in the atmosphere from Hunga Tonga. So we just really have to realize that the media is not our friend. It's trying to enslave us by deceiving us. And again, for some reason, vegans seem to be completely asleep and are too selfishly kind of like, well, we're going to use climate change to get everybody to go vegan. You shouldn't use lies to promote truth, and that's the main problem. And then look at this. Batteries in an electric car weigh 500 kilograms. To make a car battery, you need 10 tons of salt, 15 tons of ore, 12 tons. Anyway, it takes a huge amount. This thing keeps moving without me moving it, but I don't know why it's doing it. It's just has a mind of its own here. Well, it's just going. But look at this, death for millions in 1921's record heat wave. Millions of people died in the heat wave in the 1920s. Millions of people died in that heat wave. I mean, nobody dies now. And a lot more people die of cold than of heat. So it's important to really get a little perspective here. And so maybe I'll stop. I think I'm just about at the end here. Yeah, that's the end. This video, if you have a chance, the climate, the cold truth, they can't even put this on YouTube. These are scientists. These are the prestigious scientists from Princeton University and other prestigious universities just saying that the climate change narrative is a bunch of lies. You can't get it on YouTube. I mean, that says right there. And like I say, if Harris wins, you won't have a chance to know anything. How do you know anything? We won't even be able to have... I mean, right now on Facebook, our page where I have these things, our resources page is banned. I'm not allowed to even put it up on Facebook anymore. So we have to realize that there are forces that want to stop us from communicating and telling the, sharing truth. And the climate is one of the big lies right now. It's not a scientific but a human mystery. How does it happen that the whole generation of scientific experts is blind to the obvious facts? Hint, Upton Sinclair, the hardest thing in the world is to try to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on him not understanding it. That's the thing. The climate scientists realize, the ones that are at universities, they'll lose their job if they don't go along. It's just like all the doctors. Why do all the doctors not say anything about how important it is to have a healthy diet if you want to be healthy? They never say anything. They say, just don't worry about what you eat. Just come and we'll give you some drugs. So it's the same problem, basically. So, all right. So I think I'm done. I'm gonna stop. Yeah, that's the end. Okay. So thank you, everyone, for your kind participation. I'm not very used to doing these things, but I thought some of those images might be helpful. And there's really, since I did that whole thing, there is a little book that I've discovered that I'd like to recommend. It's very easy to read. It's a great little book. It's called A Very Convenient Warming. That's the name of it. A Very Convenient Warming. And it just will show you in by a scientist. This guy's a geologist, but he works with all the climate scientists also. The graphs and everything to understand this, and also something that's really important, which is that cold weather is far more deadly than warm weather. I mean, the fact that it's warming up a little bit, we should not be complaining. It's the little bit it's warming up, it's like, yes, good, because cold periods in the past is when people end up living in caves and barely surviving. And we're at the end of a 10,000, like every 90,000 years, we have we have these glacial periods. We're in an interglacial period right now. Like, we have 10,000 years between glaciers, and we're at the end of that 10,000 year period. So we're at the point where, judging by the past, it's going to get cold again. So the fact that we have these maniacs just yelling that we should stop burning carbon, I mean, all of it is just really And how much money it costs? It's trillions of dollars. We every year we spend $1 to $2 trillion giving it out to these to climate change companies that are destroying the environment with mining and making these windmills. It takes more energy to make a windmill than that will ever even produce. It takes more petroleum. I mean, I've talked about this. I mean, the fact that 30 years ago. Kind of wrap it up here. The 30 years ago, we were the petroleum was 82% of the energy that we use, and now after all these years of solar and wind and everything, it's 81%. It's only changed by 1%. I mean, I like solar. We have solar. I haven't paid any money. We haven't paid money. We get all our energy from the sun. It's good. But the underlying idea is that we have a situation in place where we are really being lied to in order, I think, to get us to agree to our own enslavement. So we have to just research this some more. And that book, A Very Convenient Warming, I'd like to just recommend that. All right, somebody, Anne, you had your hand up?
Yes.
Yes.
Those slides you showed us are so informative. Are they something that you could put out?
I mean, I could. I mean, that video at the end is that I have there. But I could. What could I do? I could put it up somewhere, I guess, and make a link to it.
Sources is a link, or however. I don't know. But
yeah. I know what you mean. It's like it took me about 8 years. I think, you know, in 2005, the World Peace Diet came out. I didn't talk about global warming because it was before anyone knew anything about it. 2006, Al Gore came on with his Inconvenient Truth. And everybody in the vegan community said, well, he should talk about animal agriculture. And I was one of those. You know, I wrote the forewords to Silas Rao's books, Climate Dharma, Climate This, Climate That. And I believed the whole thing. But when ClimateGate happened in 2011, and I started realizing that they were lying about the statistics, they were lying about everything. And these whistleblowers came forth in 2012. And then in 2013, I read this great book called The Hockey Stick Illusion, you know, the hockey stick graph where it shows temperature being really low and now it's just climbing to unparalleled heights and we're all going to boil to death. I read that book and I realized that this is a big hoax. And ever since then, I've been doing more and more research, but it's quite a thing because people are so convinced. And it's got a whole generation of young people who are like psychologically damaged. They're all thinking we have no future because of climate change. We have Greta Thunberg, who's just a pawn, who's been abused and used by the plutocrats to enslave everybody, to have her yell and scream about climate change. And vegans jumping on like, oh, it's because it's cow farts. You know, it's all methane. Methane is not a problem. Methane just cycles back into carbon dioxide again. And if the cows didn't eat the grass and turn and in their belly, the bacteria turned the grass into methane. Okay, but if they didn't eat the grass, then the grass would eventually die and the bacteria would digest it and turn it into methane anyway. So there's nothing to it. This whole thing about animal agriculture and cows and methane and nitrous oxide, I used to write articles saying, oh, we should all go vegan for the climate. It's not true. We should go vegan for the environment. Yes, I mean, we're cutting down rainforests, we're destroying the oceans, we're completely destroying the soil. I mean, there's nothing worse for the environment than animal agriculture. Yes, of course, we should be talking about that, but not the climate. They ignore everything. They ignore all the environmental devastation and focus on climate, which is a big hoax. I mean, why don't we see that? I'm like beyond, I just can't.
I think it was first proposed, and there's this webinar that I started, but it was so long and I didn't finish it yet. But it was partially about, I think Patrick Wood.
Yeah.
Technocracy, the technocrats of like the 1930s, like 1933, 34. That was when on record it was first proposed to have a climate change agenda.
Right.
So this has been planned for decades for such a long time.
Right. And no, you're right. And yeah, it goes back to Rockefeller and the Club of Rome.
Yes, it's been planned to bring in this agenda, to bring in the new world BS.
Yeah, no, they knew they had to have something where the humanity is the enemy. We have to be our own enemy. That was the goal. Because they thought if they can have something where we are our own enemy, then they can lock us down. They can tax us. They can do anything. Yeah. So that's been the agenda. They're smart. I mean, they're smart. They know what they're doing. But we shouldn't be so stupid and go along with it. We should see that it's a big lie. Really.
Right.
All these people raising their hands.
And I just wanted to say one more thing that I've been looking more into companies, geoengineering and 5G wireless, and companies that are this industry that is just booming.
Right.
Booming, and I've become so much more aware of the amount of money that is being made off this nonsense.
It's
like
it's
all based. It's all based on
climate
change and all these
and
new technologies and big important CEOs that are just huge successful corporations. It's all based on that. So they're not going to give that up. Because it just makes
It's like $1.4 trillion a year the United States is spending on climate change. I mean, think what you could, how many forests we could have planted. We could have veganized the world for $1.4 trillion. I mean, that's an incredible amount of money. And it's so tragic that it's used just in destructive purposes, just to destroy everything. Climate change is the worst destructive force there is right now, I think. I mean, that plus the big pharma and poisoning everybody, and those two things. And those are the two things the United Nations has said they're not going to allow any misinformation about. Climate change and global warming. Those are the two things.
They've got their agendas.
That's the,
depopulation, just, you know, kill off people. So.
Well, yeah, it's about, yeah, exactly. Yeah. We have time. I mean, we only have 3 minutes left, but April, you had your hand up. Did you want to still say something?
I'll try to make this really quick. We've had the discussion before about one of your main colleagues promoting this information, and I want to know at the end of what I say, like, what do you suggest to do about this? Because I just came from a beautiful, beautiful weekend with Carol Saunders and Silas Rao was there.
Oh, right.
And it felt so beautiful, and I observed very carefully, as I have before, this man's demeanor and his, I mean, he wrote from the Bhagavad Gita. He conducts himself as a genuine, authentic, caring human being. And I am just disheartened because everybody at that conference is looking forward to the 2026, you know, event, the climate, vegan climate event. And these are the people who are my colleagues as vegan advocates. And I don't know what to say. I mean, and you say, well, kind of paraphrasing, we're falling for it. You know, we're stupid for falling for it, but we're being convinced by some really credible, appearing to be very heart-centered, genuine person. I'm in a conundrum.
Yeah, well, that same thing happened with the vaccine. You know, we had John McDougall and Neil Barnard and all the people we love and respect for bringing vegan, and they all said, get vaccinated. Michael Greger, get vaccinated. You know, they all told us to get vaccinated. But, you know, that just because they say lies, you don't do it. You know, they're wrong. They're right about some things, and they're wrong about other things. You know, it doesn't mean they're bad people. They just don't. They just have an agenda. It's the thing, you know. It's like the hardest thing, like I, you know, I said there, is to get someone to understand something when their salary depends on them not understanding it. You know, if they says anything against vaccine, they would lose their job. And the same thing, I think, if you write a lot of books about climate change, you don't want to admit that. You know, it's like the whole identity. It's a job. You know, so I understand that. I think. You know, I'm sending Silas Rao an email with a link to this book. Because I think it's such an easy read. Like in 1 hour, you could just basically see clearly that it's built on nothing but just lies. I mean, carbon dioxide increasing does not impact the climate. And we really need to just like stop it with this baloney, you know. And so I'll see if he's willing to look at it. But no, I've talked to him before, and he's very friendly. He just says that he doesn't like the IPCC. He doesn't like that they don't include animal agriculture. I mean, I agree we should not eat animals, and we should do it for the environment. But for some reason, he has it in his mission to make it be about climate change. So, and it works well because everybody believes in it, but it's very difficult. You know, it's just one of those things. It's like you get a bunch of people believing something, and everybody's invested in it, and it's like a religion. You know, it's really like vaccines are a religion and climate change are religions. Mm-hmm. And you take it on faith. You trust. It's like trusting the priest. You know, that don't tell me that communion is not Christ's body and blood. It is. You know, the priest said so. You know, don't tell me climate change isn't real. The priest said so. The scientist said so. And that's it. It's really become an article of faith in a lot of ways. So, you know, we're heretics, and it's a difficult thing. But they're good people. I know it's nothing personal. It's just to try to understand that we're in a military grade psyop that's very sophisticated. And they just have complete control of the mainstream media and the educational system and all these other systems, and they use that to their advantage. and get, and people become tribal. You know, if you're in the tribe, you've got to go along with this. You've got to go along with climate change. You've got to go, you know, you're this tribal, like the vegan tribe. That's one of the things is climate change. And if you don't, we'll excommunicate you, you know. So it's tough, you know, but that's where we're at. So Madeline is telling me it's time, and she's right, it is time. We try not to go over our time and honor everybody's time, but I really thank you, April. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, everybody, Gino, everybody, for, you know, all of you, Christina and Tammy and Lisa and everybody. We have a time here. Can you turn that light on, maybe, that one there? No, the other one. That one. Yeah. Turn that light on. It might be better. Okay. So, anyway, we will be getting together pretty soon, a little sooner, because this is the fourth. We have a fifth Thursday. And then the next following Thursday will be the first Thursday of November. So we'll see if for that, for the meditation. But it's good news. We don't have to worry about climate change. We don't have to worry about global warming. We can relax. Yay. One less thing to be worried about. We can laugh about. It's getting warmer. Good. I mean, it's good for us. Better, you know, more food, better climate, better life. You know, it's you know, a lot of good things happening. We have to stay positive.
Otherwise, we have to hunger.
Really? Yeah, read this book. I mean, I really have to say, it's a very optimistic book. A very convenient warming. All right, so let's say our prayer together. You know the one. Together. Oh, and please unmute so we can hear you. And maybe turn on your camera if you don't mind. It'd be nice. Sorry. Here we go. Compassion circles the earth. Again.
Compassion circles the earth.
One more time.
Compassion circles the earth.
Thank you, everyone. We love you. Thanks for questioning all the narratives. It's so important.
Thank you.
Love you guys. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Safe
travels.
Thank you.
Thanks.